So let's go ahead and start hour number three. Been a very challenging day. Very emotional day. Really difficult day. These are really challenging, difficult times in this country. I am Jim Rome. Welcome to the program. It's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, so I led the program in hour number one with my thoughts on what transpired over the weekend. I gave you my thoughts on the protests. I talked about why I thought that was important. Some of you said, thank you very much. Well done. Others said, you know what? Nice knowing you, Rome. I've been a loyal listener for 20 years and now I'm gone. And my response to that is, I'm sorry to hear that. I really am. I wish you didn't feel that way. I wish I wasn't losing you after 20 years. But if that's the choice you want to make based on what you heard, then I accept that. Goodbye. Some of you have said, nah. You have an agenda. You have an agenda. And you're right. I do have an agenda. My agenda is to do better and get it right. Because what we're doing is not working, clearly. So yes, that is my agenda. We had Kelly Rudy on. We talked about mental health with him. Robert Klemko is covering the protests from Minneapolis. We had a great conversation with him. I've got Rod Carew coming up at the end of this hour. So that's about 40 minutes out. And he's got an incredible story to tell, which I want to get to. Let me reset this for you. 1-800-636-8686. You already know how I feel about the issue if you've been listening. I don't need to reset that entirely. If you have some thoughts on it that you want to share, you can give me a telephone call. I know I said that I wouldn't, but I might actually open it up a little bit in the next half hour. If there's something else you want to talk about that helps the program, I might be open to that. Like I mentioned, I watched the second part of that documentary involving Lance Armstrong. Yeah, I mean, again, it seems kind of weird to be talking about Lance Armstrong, of all people today. But part two of whatever that documentary was did air last night, and I watched it, and I've got to say, it wasn't much better than the first. I mean, the episode itself starts off with Lance being asked the following question.
Do you feel like you want to be relevant again?
This is going to sound terrible, but I am relevant. I am.
I don't know if it sounds terrible. It sounds false. It sounds incorrect. The fact is, you're really not. You're really not relevant. The fact is, you competed in a sport that received minimal attention before you came along. Then you generated a lot of attention and a lot of buzz for that sport. But you built all of that attention and buzz on a lie. And now people really don't think about that sport or you anymore. Like, before this documentary, when was the last time you thought about Lance Armstrong? For more than a second. And then after today, when will be the next time you think about Lance? And no, it doesn't matter that his athletic accomplishments were 15 years ago. The world just watched a 10-part doc on Michael Jordan's accomplishments, and they were 22 years ago. And people were riveted because he's still relevant, and you aren't. I mean, maybe relevant to yourself, but saying you're relevant is tone deaf. It's so in your own world. It's pure delusion. Just like this really weird semi-claim that being polarizing means that people talk about you. I mean, that's honestly not even true. I have a sports radio program. I talk sports for 3 hours every single day. And today will be the second time that I've talked about Lance in the last, I don't know how many years. And that was only in the first in a series of truly weird and bizarre moments in that documentary last night. There were some weird moments in that doc. Like that strange debate about Lance's work with cancer research and him talking about all the money he passed up so the money could go straight into his foundation. And then an extensive infomercial about the foundation and the impact it had. I mean, let's be honest about that. I don't know too many people who thought that he wasn't sincere when it came to working to raise money and raise awareness for cancer research or the impact that he had on people who were diagnosed. Because that story gave people hope. The book gave people hope. The story gave people hope. It gave people a belief that not only could you beat cancer, but you could come out even better and stronger and tougher on the other side. That's what we thought. But that was built on a lie. That was built on doping and cheating. Because he wasn't telling people that he beat cancer and went back to doping. That part of it didn't come up. Only that he beat cancer and then went back on his bike and did all these things, these amazing things, and he was clean. But he wasn't. He was saying the exact opposite. He was using the, quote, cancer shield. He was reminding everybody that he beat cancer and that there was no way he would ever take PEDs or doping after that. Remember, he used to make that point. Why would I do that? Why would I do that? I nearly died. Why in the world would I dope or take drugs after going through something like that? Why would I jeopardize my health? Remember how hard he went with that argument. Not only why would he, but how dare any of you even ask him the question? How dare any of you even think that he would? And now he says, now, that he did use cancer as a shield and that it was bleeping stupid. His words. It was that for sure, but even worse. Just like his answer about how he would respond to his son, a football player at Rice, if his son went to him and said, I want to use PEDs.
How would you feel if your son told you that he wanted to take performance-enhancing drugs?
If we were put in that position where Luke, who's a college football player, came to me and said, either I'd like to try this or I am doing this, I would say that's a bad idea. I mean, you're a freshman in college. That's, you know, it might be a different conversation if you're in the NFL. But at this point in your life and in your career, not worth it.
I mean, that's bizarre. That's really bizarre. Don't dope now. You're only a freshman in college. But if you can make it to the pros, then we have a different conversation on our hands. If you can make it to the NFL, man, have at it. It's an incredible answer. After everything this guy's gone through, that's an amazing answer. And then how about this answer about Floyd Landis?
Hey, could be worse. I could be Floyd Landis.
What, living in Leadville?
Or waking up a piece of shit every day.
Is that what you think?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I know. I don't think it. I know it.
Wow. Nice work there, Lance. Showing your maturity there. Showing that you've learned from your mistakes and grown. You're in a glass house and you are hurling the biggest boulders every single day. And it seems like the only thing you can hang your hat on is that you're not Floyd Landis. It could be worse. I could be Landis. And wake up a piece of bleep every single day. And then he's asked, is that what you think? Oh, no, that's what I know. And there was more. There was Lance allegedly ratting out former teammate Tyler Hamilton for cheating after Hamilton joined a new team and beat Lance in a time trial. There was that. There was Lance looking to destroy Greg LeMond's business after LeMond had the audacity to question Lance's decision to work with a noted doping doctor. So again, it wasn't just that he would lash out at those who suggested that he was cheating, and he was. He was looking to destroy people, their careers, their brands, their business. There was Lance calling Emma O'Reilly horrible names after she came forward and told the truth about him and the sport. So when asked to look back on that, and what do you think? Lance chalks that up to just being an idiot who was angry. See, that's not really enough, Lance. That's not good enough. You weren't just an idiot who was angry. You were more than that. I mean, I can keep going because so much of that documentary was so weird. Like, how about that part where he got really, really emotional about how Jan Ulrich was treated in Germany? How weird was that part? And then attempting to draw a parallel between how Ulrich was treated in Germany and how Lance has been treated in America. Like, you know, you've been treated the way you've been treated as a cheater and a liar because you cheated and you lied. And because you continue to be pissed that we don't get it, that people just don't get it, and that people will not welcome you back. After seeing that doc, I'm still not sure why it existed in the first place. As I said last week, if it was meant to be an image rehab, that didn't work. But it did show one thing. He desperately wants to be relevant again. He wants to be accepted again. He wants people just to move on and welcome him back. And probably the worst part about that for Lance is we have moved on. We just moved on without him. The general public doesn't really care about his explanations or excuses or partial apologies. The general public just really doesn't care about the guy at all. And that's got to eat at him.
This is going to sound terrible, but I am relevant. I am.
Tyler Hamilton, who I mentioned, was in that doc. He also came on this show back in 2011. Tyler Hamilton came on this show in 2011. And he told me on this show what it was like to be bullied by Lance.
You know, Lance found out from, the owner of the restaurant that I was at this restaurant. And he, you know, quickly came down with his posse down to the restaurant. And I had excused myself to use the restroom. And on my way back, he stuck his hand out and stopped me in my tracks, and there was Lance Armstrong, and it was not necessarily a very nice exchange. He had a lot of bad things to say to me, you know, a lot of F-bombs, and he threatened me. He said he's going to make my life a living hell, both in the courtroom and out of the courtroom. So, you know, that coming from Lance Armstrong, you know, meant a lot, so I took it pretty seriously.
I would too. I mean, he also said, I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't have what I have right now had I accepted that deal or done this differently. I wouldn't change a thing. I can remember, and again, if you know this show and you listen to the show, Lance would come on the show quite a bit back in the day, and we had some really good interviews. Of course, a lot of this was predicated on a big lie. And yes, I bought in like a lot of people. But I do remember when the tenor changed and this information started to get out and the story was changing and the narrative was changing. So then did my take. And I remember getting an email from him. It was not the nicest email, where, and this is what he did. But like you said in the documentary, everyone who dopes lies. And he was so far down that road that in his mind, he had no choice but to come at people the way he did. But in coming at people the way he did, he was destroying people who were telling the truth. Not destroying people who were slandering him or smearing him, but who were telling the truth. And that was Tyler Hamilton in 2011 on this show. All right, when we come back, I do have an open segment for you. Rod Carew is coming up at the bottom of the hour. Also, there was a fight night in Nevada. I tweeted at that time that I was interested to see Tyron Woodley's welcome back party and to see what he looked like after that long layoff and after a devastating loss, and it did not go well for him at all. And we could touch on that too. 1-800-636-8686 is your telephone number. Clones, you've heard me talk about Walmart delivery before, but right now Walmart has their fastest delivery service yet. Walmart Express Delivery. Get groceries and more delivered from their door to yours with no contact delivery in 2 hours or less. Zero markups. Same low prices as in-store. Don't let work, kids, and at-home workout or whatever else life throws at you right now get in the way of getting what you need when you need it. Try Walmart Express Delivery today. Restrictions and fees do apply. Walmart Express Delivery.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Convenient and known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people that you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Hall of Famer Rod Carew is going to join me next segment. Got an ATP that I want to set up for you, too. That's coming up a little bit later on. Let's go to Santa Monica Paul in Santa Monica. I've got time for your telephone calls. We continue right now. It's good to have you, Paul. How are you?
I'm well, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to call because I just find it comforting that you're always on the air after something like this happens. I live three blocks from where that car was burning last night. The Starbucks on the corner was vandalized. There's people protecting their businesses with AK-47s and AR-15s on the roof. And it was just really surreal. And this was after going down to Colorado and Ocean, the protest, which could not have been more peaceful, mild. I mean, there were prayers and 2 minutes and 53 seconds of silence. The police, you know, were respectful. There was a line of, like, older ladies that stood between the police and protesters so it wouldn't get out of hand. I mean, that's how together it was and how it felt so right that, you know, that happened. And then you cut to, I left at about 1:45 and I just went down on my bicycle, rode by the 3rd Street Promenade, and it was shut down. You know, there was just police cars like on every block making sure that people didn't go in there. And there was already a first report that the Nike store had gotten broken into. And it's a very upscale, that Jordan 23 store.
Yep.
And, I mean, within 2 hours, it just went nuts. But, I don't know if it was some of the same people, but I just don't equate the two things. I really believe that there were people coming that were, you know, on the backs of the protesters, like using that as cover for their nefarious, thievery. And when I woke up this morning, I looked forward to hearing you. I just want to thank you for, I've been a listener since the Mighty 690, and, some of your listeners will get over it. There's no sports to talk about anyway. What do we want to talk about? The 73 Mets versus Phillies game? I just want to say thank you. Sorry for going on, but no, I really appreciate your career.
No, I appreciate it, Paul. Thanks so much. And I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, and I know you're right in the middle of it. I mean, some of the things that I saw in that area that he referenced, obviously, were terrifying. Terrifying. And yes, I want to reiterate this. The looting, the vandalism, man, it's horrible. It's terrible. Nobody is defending that. It's terrible. And there are some people there that are not there for the right reasons. And they're kind of running a misdirection. Some of that. I understand this. It's a terrible thing to see. I understand that there are local businesses that were on the verge of reopening that have been off during the pandemic. Some of these businesses that will never be the same. Some that already will never be back. And they've been vandalized or destroyed. It's terrible. Man, it's horrible. But I think there is a distinction to be made between the looters and the peaceful protesters. I've seen some of you try to argue to me like, hey, Rome, wake up. It's no longer a peaceful protest. It may have started that way, but it's not now. Well, it is for many. And for many, for some, it's not. It's a terrible thing. The area that he talks about did look like a war zone. It's terrifying, man. The whole thing is so scary. And again, I am no expert. I'm not trying to be anything more than what I am. I host a sports talk show. I can only speak to my experience. But as a middle-aged white male, I don't have an experience that I can't begin to relate to some of what the folks who are peacefully protesting have gone through. But I've taken telephone calls and I've heard from listeners, and the story they tell and the experience they have is very different than my experience. Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska. Steve in Omaha. Nice to have you on the show, Steve. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Jim. And I first want to say thank you for all the things that you said on the beginning of the show and the things you're saying now. I'm an African-American male. I have 6 children, and 3 of them are African-American boys. And like yourself, being a father, there reaches a point of age where your sons are able to drive. And there's things that we all worry about as parents. We worry about them, you know, speeding tickets or rolling the whip or, God forbid, dying in a car accident. But see, I have that pressure of worrying about my sons dying at a traffic stop because they fit the description. And it's an everyday fear. It's an everyday fear. And you know what drives me crazy? Like, I'm 50 years old, Jim. This isn't 1960. This is 2020. I shouldn't have to feel this way, the constant fear that my sons, who are all college graduates, who've never committed crimes, who always lend helping hands when people ask for them, good boys. But you know what? The color of their skin make them a person that automatically fits the description of some made-up crime that happens, and it scares me. And I used to be a cop, so I'm not here to say all cops are bad. I never would make that, you know, never make that distinction, because most of the cops I work with, we went to work and we wanted to do our job and go home during the day. And so I think there are good cops out there, but where are those good cops when these things are happening all the time? And I don't mean to ramble. I just want to get that off my chest. Thank you so much to you and your crew for this day, because I spent the weekend with tears in my eyes because my heart hurts, man. And so I appreciate what you're doing. And thank you and all the clones. You guys, we got to come together, because if we don't make this a better place for our kids and our kids' kids, this place is going to burn to the ground, and we don't want that. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Steve. Steve in Omaha said he used to be a cop and that not all cops are bad. Of course not. Of course not. That's a very difficult job. That's a very difficult job. And of course, not all police officers are bad. Of course. But there's some bad things that aren't changing. And we've seen it. And my concern, again, as I mentioned earlier, is even if you acknowledge that, what's happening is we're acknowledging it and then we're just moving on. And we're going right back to doing what we've always done. And what we've always done clearly is not good enough, because these things are still happening. So we need to do better. We need to do more. That's my agenda. 1-800-636-8686. And again, I can only speak to my experience. I don't have that experience. I will never have to have that conversation with my 2 sons. I mean, lots of conversations, but not that conversation, not the one that he said that he's had to have with his kids. I certainly have never had that approach like the caller earlier who said, yeah, this is what I have to do every day when I drive home. I have to have a certain process for getting home, a certain way of carrying myself and driving. I don't have to do that. I just get in my car and I go. I don't even think about it. Coming up next segment, give me a minute, Alvy. Rod Carew, MLB Hall of Famer, class of 1991. He has an absolutely extraordinary story to tell about how somebody saved his life. And I don't know if you know that or not, but it's a story you want to hear. And I don't believe that Rod Carew has actually ever been on the program. But another athlete saved his life, literally. And we will have that story for you. As I mentioned earlier, if you couldn't get through, or if you want to leave a message, there is another phone number that you can use to do so, 949-385-0447. That actually goes into our podcast where I play your voicemail back, 949-385-0447. This week on the podcast, Jimmy Connors. Talk some tennis with Jimmy Connors, and we're going to push that out on Wednesday. The Smack-Off is still scheduled for June 19th. We didn't get our player profile in today, but probably will do so tomorrow. We are now 18 days off. 18 days is not 18 shows. You're on the clock. You're running out of time. The winner of the Smack Off gets $5,000. That from my friends at Four Sharp Corners, the world's largest seller of PSA graded sports cards. They buy and they sell the highest quality, the highest graded sports cards. You can find them at foursharpcorners.com, foursharpcorners.com. Good dudes, good product. fans of the program, and they want to be involved with the Smack Off, and I said I would love to have you. So I want to thank those guys very much. When we come back, Rod Carew joins us. May have time for a telephone call still yet, so if you want to keep trying, go ahead. 1-800-636-8686. First up, here is your bottom of the hour sports update. All night. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Quick reminder, the ATP, the Ask the Pros, is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, one last segment. It's been a very challenging day, to say the least. But as promised, we are joined by somebody who made 18 straight All-Star appearances, a seven-time batting champion, an American League MVP, a Roberto Clemente Award winner, 3,053 career hits, a lifetime batting average of .328. He is a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he has an autobiography now. It's called One Tough Out, Fighting Off Life's Curveballs. That book is out right now. You should get it. We are joined by Rod Carew. Rod, it's a pleasure to have you on today. There's a lot that I want to talk to you about regarding your book and all the stories inside of it, including our shared connection to Conrad Ruland. But before we do that, Rod, how are you and the people around you doing right now in the middle of this pandemic?
Well, we're doing good, Jim. You know, I put a self-imposed quarantine in myself, you know, because of my immune system. So I've got to stay away from people. And I'm hanging in there.
Good to hear it, Rod. I can appreciate that very much. Listen, there's a lot that we can cover, but there was a time in your life when maybe you weren't somebody who was looking to be in the spotlight or to make it about you, but your daughter Michelle changed all of that, and it feels like she is an enormous inspiration behind the book. If we were to go way back, you also write about growing up in Panama. What was life like for you growing up?
Miserable. To say the least, you know, I was an abused kid growing up, and it was a constant. And baseball was the only thing that took my mind away from it, because when I got out of the baseball field, I felt like I was at home, you know, that no one could touch me, you know, when I was out there. So it has done a lot for me in my life, so I appreciate that.
Rod Carew is joining us. He's got a new book out. Rod, not to belabor the point, but you just said it. It was a very difficult childhood. Your father was a violent man when you were a child. What was that like, and how much pain and fear did you have to deal with as a result of that?
Well, it was every day. You know, he either beat me or beat my mom. So we were the only two in the family that he took advantage of. But I think because I was a sick kid, you know, sickly kid when I was growing up. You know, I had rheumatic fever, and I spent about 9 months in the hospital. And he didn't think that I was going to amount to anything. You know, even though I loved baseball so much, he didn't think that I had the insides to make it, to go out there and play every day and make it.
Hall of Famer Rod Carew is joining us. Well, you found the sport. Well, you tell me, Rod, did you find baseball, or did baseball find you, and what did you love so much about the game when you started?
Well, I actually was playing soccer, and my uncle, who was in charge of the physical education department at the school, saw me play baseball for the first time, and he said, okay, no more soccer. It's going to be baseball from here on in. So he took me under his wing and worked with me a lot, and made sure that I enjoyed the game. And I told him, I says, yeah, I says, one of these days I want to leave this country and go to the United States and play baseball in front of 40 or 50,000 fans, like I hear them say on the Armed Forces radio.
Rod Carew joining us, and that's exactly what you did. Now, you were playing ball, Rod, in New York. A scout saw you. The next time the Twins were in town to face the Yankees, they brought you to Yankee Stadium for a workout. What do you remember about that day?
Well, you know, it was the first day that I've been inside of Yankee Stadium. I used to play outside at the little ballparks that they had there but I never went into to the stadium. I, you know, during the games that we played outside, sometimes the Yankees would be playing inside, and I used to think about hearing the crowds, and you know, every time someone might have hit a home run, Mantle or Maris or whoever, and I would say to myself, you know, one day I might be playing in this same house right here that Ruth built.
Rod Carew is a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. He has an autobiography out right now. It's called One Tough Out, Fighting Off Life's Curveballs, out, and the book is out right now, I should say. So, Rod, you said that one of the most memorable days of your career was June 26th, 1977. That was Rod Carew Jersey Day at Metropolitan Stadium. You had five hits. You scored five runs. You drove in six that day. How special a day was that?
Oh, it was a great day because I think we were playing the White Sox, and it seems like everything I hit found a hole. And, you know, I received, I think, six or seven standing ovations during the course of that game. And, you know, I appreciated the people standing and applauding me and having me come back out to dugout because, you know, they saw me come in there as a young kid, and all of a sudden I took over the charge of the ball club because Tony and Harmon had left. So now it was up to me to be the guy that whenever they need something, I was the one that was sent upstairs to Mr. Griffin.
Hmm. Rod Carew is joining us. Now, Rod, the power of the book is that it's not just about your baseball career. It's about your life after baseball as well. As many people know, your daughter, Michelle, was diagnosed with leukemia as a teenager. Rod, personally, I'll never forget. My father was diagnosed with leukemia, and I'll never forget that conversation. What do you remember about hearing the diagnosis for the first time yourself regarding Michelle?
Well, you know, I knew nothing about leukemia. And then I started reading up the day that we found out about it. Then I went and I started reading up on it, and I learned a lot. I learned it's like a death sentence, you know, because at the time, not too many kids were being saved because not too many people were able to give, to donate, to keep kids alive. And so I got involved heavy, and the reason I did was because of Michelle. You know, she knew that I didn't talk to the press that much, and she told me, she said, "Daddy, you've got to promise me." You know, after she watched all the kids in the hallways kicking the soccer balls, and you know, they're dragging their poles down the hallway trying to play hockey and stuff like that, she says, "You know, Daddy, no matter what happens to me, you know," she says, "I want you to help all these kids. And I know that to do that, you're going to have to talk to the press, and you have to promise me that that you'll do that." So I made a promise to her, and since then, that's all I do. I talk about the cancer kids, and I've had a golf tournament this would have been, I think, the 25th year, but we had to cancel out because of the pandemic. So I'm still there plugging away trying to help kids because it's so important. You know, I've saw so many families come through Children's Hospital in Orange County and lost their homes because they have to pay to try and keep their kids alive. So, you know, I was fortunate to have still been in the baseball system for insurance and stuff like that. So they handle everything for us and really made it easier on myself and on my wife and my other two daughters.
Rod Carew is joining us. Rod, I'm clearly aware everybody in the area knows how much work you've done with Chalk. We've also been involved, and there are amazing people that are working there, and I know they so appreciate the work that you've done. You're also an advocate for the American Heart Association. You suffered a heart attack in 2015, and then, Rod, this story is absolutely amazing. In 2016, you needed to receive a heart and kidney transplant. You received a transplant from Conrad Ruland, a former NFL player who had passed very young. What was it like when you received that call that you were going to receive a transplant?
Well, first of all, Jim, you know, I had met Conrad when he was, I think, 11 years old, because my son and daughter went to school there, same school that he was at, and I was there for a basketball game, and he was out running around, you know, playing and stuff, and then he came up to me and he said, "You're Rod Carew, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "When I grow up, I want to be an athlete just like you." I said, "Yeah, but the first thing you have to do is get good grades in school. Don't forget your schoolwork." He said, "Oh, no, I'm a good student, and you know, but I'm going to be an athlete." I says, "Okay." And sure enough, this little boy grew up to be, I don't know, 6'6 or something like that, and signed and played with the Jets. And then he played with the Ravens. And during, you know, he was waiting for a contract to possibly sign with the New England Patriots when he was working out. And then he had an aneurysm. And the story goes on from there that he was the kid that saved my life. I was able to get a heart from him, get a kidney from him. And so I got rid of that Volkswagen that was in me. And now I have a Maserati that's pumping and, you know, giving me a lot more life to live.
Oh, it's incredible. It's an amazing story. You met him as an 11-year-old. And then he had this tragic passing. He was an amazing person. My family knew Conrad a little bit because my wife and my kids worked out the same gym, and he was such an amazing guy. His family reached out and said they feel like they're a part of your family now. What does that mean to you? Rod, is there any way to put all of this into words even?
You know, my friend upstairs, I think he stepped in and he said, "I'm going to keep you around for a little bit longer because you've been doing such good work trying to help people." And that, my good friend, is God. So, you know, I had faith in him. And, you know, I told Rhonda, I told my wife, I says, "Honey, if anything goes wrong, you know," I says, "I'm not afraid to die." I says, "You know, I will go home with my father, and he'll continue taking care of me." But the family, you know, we became close to the family right away. I went over after I got out of the hospital. I went over to the family's home, and his mom wanted to put her head on my chest and listen to his heartbeat. And I know what that's like, you know, losing a daughter and the family losing a son. I knew what it was like. And, you know, I had to hold back tears because, you know, I knew what she was doing was very important to her and to her husband. So we had a nice day, nice dinner, and we became the Carewlands. And wherever we went as a foursome to try and get the word out, you know, to people to get their hearts checked and don't wait. And if they feel something, go to the doctors right away, because that's what I did. You know, we had a leukemia lymphoma walk Saturday night at Angel Stadium. And so Sunday morning, I got up and I said, "I think I'm going to go, you know, just play 9 holes and just practice." And this was at 5:30 in the morning. My wife didn't even know that I left the house. And so when I got there, I was the only person out on the course that day. And, you know, it's not a big fancy course. It's a small course that people can go out and work on their game and stuff. And so the first ball that I hit went straight down the middle. And I was surprised because usually I have a little slice or a little cut,
right,
you know, in my drives. So as I'm putting my club back in my bag, I felt this burn in the top of my chest, like a indigestion burn. Then my hand started to get, you know, clammy. And I remember what this friend of mine had told me, that, you know, he was in Vegas and he was playing the craps, and he felt something funny in his chest. Picked up his money, went up to see the doctor. They sent him to the hospital, and he had, like, I don't know, 95% blockage. Mm. And when he got home, he was able to take care of it. So
right.
I remember that, and I backed my cart right back to the clubhouse. I was on the first hole. And I walked in and I asked the lady if she could please call the paramedics. Now, she was just opening the club, and there's a 14-year-old kid that was helping her. And he got a little upset because she hadn't gotten on the phone to call the paramedics. And he said,
Rod, let me do this. And I am so sorry to have to do this. But unfortunately, the show is over. We just ran out of time. I feel terrible about that. Rod, I want to say I'm so thankful that you made that phone call. And I want to encourage everybody to get his book, One Tough Out, Fighting Off Life's Curveballs. Rod, it is such a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate that so much. The book is amazing to read. Thank you for everything you've done. And my thanks to Rod Carew. And that's how we're going to